Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Time for the Moon Boys. Hello, Tim. How are you?
Well, we've had a bit of a technical thing leading up to this, but that doesn't matter, does it? Because we're on now.
We're on. We're in different parts of the universe. Not that different. It's still in the same city. But we aren't in the shed, are we?
You know, like those global positioning GPS, you know, where you've...
I know what that is, yes.
Yeah. If there was one for the universe, our dots would be identical, wouldn't they? We'd be in exactly the same place.
That depends on how big the map was. I mean, if it's for the universe and it's really trying to get in the whole universe, then I imagine it's quite a big GPS image you're talking about. And maybe you being in your part of London and me being in my part of London would just about show. But possibly not.
I don't think so. I think if you've got a GPS thing that covers infinity and we're 6 miles from each other, I think we're literally on the same dot, aren't we?
Well, it's very hard to know the truth of that, since there is no such thing.
That's a good point.
You're talking about God's sat-nav, basically, there, aren't you?
Right.
And who knows?
That's what the G stands for. I didn't know that.
Yeah. God's... What does GPS stand for? Something God's satellite.
God's people sensor.
God's people sensor. Okay, well, we're definitely quite... The thing is, as we know, God sees all of us through his godly eyes and also through his God people system. And so, if he sees all of us, he can't see us as one dot.
He sees all of us.
He sees my basic human essence and your basic human essence. Mm. Something's going to be no good if it's just one merged dot.
I don't want to get... This is maybe opening out too much and not suggesting we crack this, but...
Yeah.
And I know it's sort of well-trodden, but... What would be the point of God creating humans to see what they, to give them free will and see what they, what would the point of that be?
Oh, what's God's motivation for the whole thing? It's just quite a big experiment, I think. I think that's how it works with the free will argument. It's a big experiment.
Right.
He's like a scientist. Because it is a bit like that. It's a bit like, is it Stanford experiment where they... said, right, you these people are being wired up and every time they say something, you give them an electric shock.
Yes.
That's sort of testing humans to see what their moral compass is.
But that I get because that's human.
And it's real thing that happened,
Well, no, but no. Okay. Wow, you're ruling out God really early on. We haven't quite explored it yet. But that's experiment. Humans experimenting with humans. Think what are we like? God, it's like you creating this whole thing and then saying, "I wonder if it works." Or you think, "Well, it doesn't matter." Who cares?
Yeah. Can I just one small point? What you just said is that's humans experimenting on humans, thinking, "What are we like?" The phrase "What are we like?" I don't really think of it like that. I think of it as "What are we like?" And that is why I associate with the Stanford experiment. Do you know what I mean? The Stanford experiment, which demonstrated there was a deep depravity and sort of Nazi tendency within human beings when they were taking what they thought were orders to just be unbelievably sadistic to other people. Mm. I doubt at the end of that experiment, anyone said, "What are we like?"
I think if the Today program had been around when the Stanford experiment, I think that's exactly what if they said, like, what's the one thing you take from it? They'd probably say, you know what? What are we like?
That might be what God's doing with his universal experiment.
Right.
Except he wouldn't use the word we because he's not a human.
What are they like?
What are they? Yes.
But I suppose what I mean is if God created these humans and said, I wonder if they'll be violent or I wonder if they'll be altruistic. So think, well, whichever they are, just make them slightly differently. I mean, you've made them up. So what?
Also, when does the experiment end?
Yes.
Because, I mean, it's a long ongoing experiment. It's been going on for a while.
Brexit referendum, maybe.
It's been going on for a while now. And if he's trying to, in most experiments, they collate the information after a certain time and present the data and come to a conclusion. But one wonders, it feels very like God's never going to do that.
Do you think he's doing something else?
I can't think what it might be.
Because they seem to have invented the vaccine in a year. And so
that wasn't God, though. That was some scientists.
That's what I'm saying. That's like the chess computer beating chess grandmasters, like created something that's a bit better than him.
Because you think God created coronavirus and then they beat him with the vaccine.
Oh, no, I wasn't thinking that. I was just thinking about that's an experiment that's gone quite quickly and they've sort of, we've done it. And that's what's next. Whereas God is still going, as you say, after millennia.
Yeah. I mean, what I sometimes wonder, I mean, from my position of fundamentalist atheism, is that if I did believe in God, I might never bother with the argument like people go on about. I'm surprised we've got onto all this so quickly, but there we are. People go on about, but if there's a God, why do bad things happen? I would say, well, that's not relevant because God is an artist, isn't he? He doesn't believe in good and evil and stuff like that. He just he's just creating this thing.
Oh, I see.
Sort of his own whatever, and we can't understand it. And it's just ongoing. It's just an ongoing artistic endeavor, humanity and life.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm also an atheist, but here's something kind of wonderful.
Right.
It doesn't prove the existence of God, but that you definitely know this. And my son is doing history of art at the moment, and he was doing a thing about what you learn about colour and stuff, how you should talk about a colour in a painting, you know, what sort of the language is and what you should look for. And I was looking at the notes because I was just quite interested. And very early on in the notes, it says this thing, which is kind of amazing, which I know you know, but that every single colour, primary colours, are every colour, aren't they?
Yeah, every colour comes from a mixture of the primary colours, or is a primary colour.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Is it?
Well, there are three colours, basically.
There are three basic colours, that's right.
Green.
But there are also, there's very few building blocks of matter. There's sort of neutrons, protons and electrons, then there's quarks and muons and whatever, but really, it's incredible. All types of matter are basically electrons and neutrons and protons.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, just in slightly different orders.
Let's take it to songwriting.
Good. Because some people actually do listen to this podcast because they're interested in music. Not that
there
many.
There are 11 notes, right?
Yeah.
The 12th being a repetition of the first one.
Yeah. There are 11 notes in the Western piano scale.
Right.
I mean, you know, in Indian music and Eastern music, it's completely different.
Is that true?
Yeah, the C, C sharp, D, D sharp, that's a Western piano scale that you're talking about.
But when you're playing a sitar, it has those notes, right?
No, I don't think it does. I think it has more notes. I think it has quarter tones and things like that on it.
Okay.
And certainly in electronic music, you've got more notes.
Let's stick to Western pop music.
Yes, the piano.
And the piano. You would think that more often than not, you'd write a song and think, oh, can't stop writing. It's just basically I keep doing I Am the Walrus.
All the Young Dudes. Tell you what, let's make it Bowie. Why not?
Okay.
It's All the Young Dudes, partly because...
Drag him into it.
Stand By Me by Oasis.
Yeah.
Someone was saying the other day, I don't think this is libelous, so I'll say allegedly anyway, is just basically a rewrite of All the Young Dudes, which actually I don't hear because I don't, probably just not a good enough ear. It's only when, you know, Stand By Me by Oasis.
I know exactly the bit you're talking about.
Yeah, there's a bit that goes, duh, 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 duh. That's very, very, very well done, that.
Yeah.
But you know the bit I mean, that sounds like the four chords.
Yeah.
That being your point, I think, that you would have thought with that few notes, you'd always be rewriting another song.
You'd think it'd be the other way around. You'd think, yeah, mostly it's nearly all the same as someone else. And occasionally there's, oh, that's a bit new. But it is the other way around.
But that, isn't that true of the human understanding in every respect? Like, we've all got a nose. Well, some people unfortunately haven't. But let's not worry about people
it's
with no noses.
It's good of you to be sensitive to that.
Yeah, just in case anyone's listening to this without a nose. You know, I don't want to exclude anyone. But let's assume for the moment we all have a nose, two eyes, a mouth, and two ears, right? You'd have thought the human face has quite a small amount of features that are all fairly similar. And yet, we are able to discern with most people, occasionally not with twins or whatever, the differences between thousands and thousands of faces.
I think about that a lot, that exactly, you never meet someone who looks exactly the same as someone else, do you? But well, very, very, who do you think you look like if you were like, with a little bit of rearranging, like only a tiny bit, who could you turn into most obviously?
Ben Elton.
Ben Elton, okay.
Well, because I am well known, this happens to me all the time, and I definitely don't want to tell my seven stories, some of which I told on your program the other day. I was watching, it was on yesterday, I was watching Unforgivable, the Mel Giedroyt show that I was on. And I went well on that show. I got a lot of laughs, but I watched it and thought, I've told these fucking stories too many times.
Yeah.
I'm telling them again. There were one or two I had never told before, but in fact, that's the same thing. I'm rearranging.
Right.
A small amount of stories into new patterns. Anyway, why am I bringing that up?
Because you look like Ben Elton.
Oh, yes. Well, so I'm not going to tell the 27... No, I've got about seven stories about being mistaken for Ben Elton. But I have been mistaken. Here's one I haven't told. Ben Elton wrote a book called Two Brothers, which is set during the war.
Right.
And I wrote a book set during the war called The Secret Purposes. So there is an element of confusion there. But I once met a woman... I actually was telling Ben Elton this the other day. He said, have you read Two Brothers? I said, not only have I read it, I once met a woman who insisted that I'd written it. She said, that book you wrote, I really liked it. And I thought she meant The Secret Purpose at first. She said, that book set during the war. And after a while, it was clear to me from her describing the plot that she meant Two Brothers by Ben Elton. And I said, no, that's by Ben Elton. And she said, no. You know the one. I just kept going and going. And no amount of me saying that is definitely a different book by a different person would, you know, convince her.
But she thought you were Ben Elton, therefore.
I'm not sure she did think that, because that is, here's one of the really weird things about being well known and looking like other people, is that you sometimes exist in a kind of Schrodinger's Ben Elton Badilness, where they sort of think you're both person. And I tell you what perfectly describes this, which is that my son, Ezra, when he was about 5, 6, I took him to see The Muppets, the film, and Stephen Fry was at the film of The Muppets. And I was talking to Stephen Fry and Ezra appeared, and in quite a sort of like, I'm going to say this, I want to say something to this person way, like a child might do. He said, I just want to say I'm a very big fan of Top Gear. And Stephen Fry said, do you think I'm Jeremy Clarkson or James May? And Ezra said, both. And when I thought about it, I thought, you could mistake him for both. I mean, he can't be both. He can't be oscillating between both of them, but you could mistake him for both, certainly if you were 6 years old or whatever.
Well, yeah, I've got that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going back to the fact that this woman, she thought you'd written a book by someone who really looks a lot like you, but she didn't think you were him.
No. No, she didn't think I was him. In her mind, David Baddiel wrote Two Brothers. It's a sort of confusion that people have. You've overlapped with someone else.
Yes. And did you find that during the writing of Blackadder, was that an issue?
Yes, that's like a story I tell, you see. You've now trodden on a story I tell, which is that Ronan Keating of Boyzone once came up to me at the Comedy Awards and told him he was a massive fan, he said. And it went on for about, would say about 7 minutes, about, I love everything you do. I've just always been a fan. You're so funny and blah, blah, blah. It was all really nice. And then he said, what I really, really like that you did was Blackadder. And I said, I said, I'm not Ben Elton. He just looked really angry, like I've been deliberately trying to trick him with my face. And that is an old story that I tell quite a lot. But he definitely was quite angry. He walked away. It was really like I was fucking with him by having this face and turning up at the Comedy Awards and pretending to be Ben Elton. And maybe it just didn't occur to him that I, you know, was like another comedian who he had mixed up with Ben Elton. I think he just thought this is some imposter that has got all this praise for nothing.
Wow. So, yeah, feeling the anger is,
that's
unwelcome, isn't it, to say the least?
Yeah, although I can see, I mean, I don't know Ronan Keating, so if you're listening, Ronan, I apologise, but I think he just felt humiliated. But I hadn't done anything to humiliate him.
Right.
I just stood there and had this face.
It's a bit like me and Roger Braidwood, I suspect.
Who's that?
He was the next door neighbour growing up.
Yeah.
And his son, Gordon, he was a friend of mine. I feel compelled to say, amazingly, he didn't have a nose, which sounds just because I'm still a bit... I'm sort of worried that there are...
Noseless people.
But there probably are people who don't have a nose, and it's probably bad.
Yeah, I'm sure it's bad.
How do they smell?
Yeah, my dog's got one. Or he hasn't got one. Anyway...
Good luck riffing on that joke. My dog's got a nose. All right, has he?
How does he smell? Quite easily. Although he's a little bit bugged up at the moment.
And also he smells, you know, bad as well.
Yeah, because dogs often do. Yeah.
But in Wisborough Green, where I grew up, there probably still is, actually, a flower show on August Bank Holiday, and they have a tug of war.
Right.
And... at that point, like my dad and Roger and a few, John Newman, obviously, and a few others, Linda's husband from...
Oh, right, Linda, okay.
And they were all in a tug of war. And I think they must have won or done well. And I ran towards my dad, I was about six, and just sort of, well, maybe I was younger, sort of hugged his legs.
Yeah.
Because it seemed to be the right height and said, well done. And I looked up, and I can still see now, I looked up and looking down at me was Roger Braidwood. And...
Oh, really? So you thought it was your dad, but it was Roger Braidwood?
I was absolutely mortified.
Yeah. Did he storm off like Ronan Keating?
I don't know what he did. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I just don't know what he did, but I remember being kind of slightly traumatised by it.
Yeah, it's quite traumatising.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did Roger Braidwood look like your dad?
No, nothing like him. He was, well, depends what you're comparing it to.
Yeah,
he
they both had no noses, so that's probably your problem.
He did. No, he didn't really look like him. And he was, I think, a pretty nice guy from what...
Did you actually hang on to his leg? Like
a, yeah, well,
like a dog trying to shag his leg?
Yeah, I sort of grabbed his leg and probably it was a bit exposing, sort of just sort of...
Yes, that's the other thing, is what you've done, which is a little bit like... This is why Ronan Keating... You've actually managed to find why Ronan Keating was
right
upset, because you hugging your dad's leg is quite vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I'm so happy to see my dad's won the tug of war and beaten Linda's husband and everything. Yeah. And I'm so happy about it. And, you know, it's very moving and touching and a sweet thing to do. But then you've got the wrong leg. And so suddenly you feel all that vulnerability is wrong and exposed. Yeah. And a little bit like that is involved in going up to someone at a celebrity event and saying, I'm a massive fan.
Yes, that's true.
It also has a slight problem as well, which is, I'm such a massive fan, I don't really know what you look like. I think that's the other reason it might be humiliating.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And maybe we've all been in this situation. You are so embarrassed, you just have to walk away. It's sort of so ruined.
Yes.
There's no way out of it.
No, that's true. Well, the way out of it, but he didn't do this, because I think I did say, I'm not Ben Elton, I'm David Baddiel, would be to say, oh, sorry, silly of me. I'm a massive fan of yours too, but that isn't what happened. Not at all. Anyway, no. I'm going to move on because it's 20 minutes in. We did mention Bowie briefly, but I am going to mention, we don't have to mention him. So as we know, my only attempt to do any preparation for this podcast now is to type in Bowie into the Google News. And the big news on Bowie Google News is that Alice Cooper has now sort of suggested that he was the original brains behind everything that Bowie did.
Wow.
That he invented kind of glam rock and that whole theatrics and whatever. Mm. So I did a little investigation into this because I thought, well, that's obviously can't be true because Alice Cooper, God love him, but he's not a genius like Bowie. But then there is a rather weird thing, which is that in the 60s, he was in a band called The Spiders And get this, they broke up and reformed, and they were called Naz.
Really?
Yeah. Alice Cooper's band was called The Spiders, and then when they broke up, they were called Naz. And actually, they only stopped being called Naz because it turned out that Todd Rundgren had a band called The Naz. That's just like red herring in the point I'm trying to tell you, which is because he claims that Bowie came to see him on stage in about 1972 or 73 and said, I presume they were actually there, to Woody and Mick and Trevor, right, this is how we should be. We should be like this. And that's what Alice is saying today.
When was he in the Naz?
Sort of 1969, 68, right, right. 69.
So that's incredible.
Yeah.
And has Bowie ever said anything?
I Googled Bowie, Alice Cooper, and I mainly found that news story again and again.
Yeah, yeah.
What I didn't find, because if I was Alice Cooper and I was going to make this quite bold claim that I am essentially the godfather of the whole Bowie thing, I think I would have also said, and by the way, in one of his most famous songs, that line, you know, is there, you know, both the Spiders and he was the Naz are in one song that is one of the most central songs of Bowie. So that proves it. I would have said that, but he doesn't say that.
Yeah. To me, this is a bit like we've talked about how you can't seriously say, well, I think it was Jonathan Ross that said it. You can't say once you pop, you can't stop. Right.
It was Jonathan Ross who said yes.
In a serious way. I similarly find I can't sort of with a straight face and hand on heart say that around 1972, 73, David Bowie had a band called The Spiders.
You can't say it.
No, well, like, it doesn't feel real that his band were called The Spiders from Mars.
Well, they weren't quite, were they? They were called The Spiders from Mars in the world of Ziggy Stardust and The Spiders from Mars.
But like people like Woody Woodmansey refer to themselves as being in The Spiders at that time.
Yes. And because that's because when they went on stage,
right,
Bowie was playing Ziggy Stardust.
Right.
And they were The Spiders from Mars, sort of.
Point being, Alice Cooper had a band called The Spiders, right? Did you say?
Yeah, but they were not Alice Cooper and The Spiders.
Okay.
Alice Cooper, before he became Alice Cooper, was in various bands in the 60s, and one was called The Spiders and one was called Naz.
Because that, as you say, that seems to be the thing that most of all he should say, is that Bowie had a band called The Spiders. And that does sound like Alice Cooper's idea, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, Alice Cooper, if he wants to say Bowie nicked it, which is sort of what he's saying, so I'm going to quote this. David used to come to the show when he was a mime artist. He was Davy Jones back then. I remember at one of our Welcome to My Nightmare shows, he brought his band, The Spiders from Mars, and he was saying this is what we should be doing. But he never did it the way we did it.
What, in a way that didn't create history?
Yeah. It opened a huge door, apparently. When we started doing theatrics, that opened a huge door for Bowie, Lou Reed and Velvet Underground. Because you could be theatrical and commercial at the same time. He's sort of casting around for different things, because he then says, I created Alice as a villain, and Bowie created all of his characters to fit who he wanted to be. So I never really saw him as competition.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things about that. One is it's just a fundamental misunderstanding of how doors work, because you don't need a massive door to let them all through, do you? You just need a door.
Did he say a door? Did he mention
a door? He said, I created a big door for Lou Reed, as if they all need to go through at the same time, which isn't true. Yeah.
No, that's not true. No, from a carpentry point of view.
I think he means I created a door to a very big room.
Right. Yes. That does make more sense.
Yeah.
If he means metaphorically, there was this incredible world of theatrics and rock music.
Yeah.
Then the door could be quite small into that.
Easily.
Yeah.
There's a lot of amazing places that only have small doors.
Like what?
I don't know.
What are you thinking of there?
I'm thinking of, let's say, going to Wembley. Well, you've played Wembley. What did you play? Wembley Stadium?
No, Arena. But I've been to Wembley Stadium. That's got quite a big door.
Yeah, that's the wrong example.
A number of enormous doors. They're more like gates.
I think somewhere like Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
Sorry, Wembley Arena, I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
You did stand-up, right?
I've done stand-up there, yes.
I bet it doesn't have massive doors. It probably has quite perfunctory sort of...
Yeah, quite perfunctory doors. I mean, again, quite a few doors. So I wouldn't say it's got a small door. Yeah. But I take your point that I don't think there's any amazing building I could think of. There probably is one where the reason you're going there is for the door.
Yeah. Doors are very much a means to an end.
Yeah. So, well, in a way, maybe he's right without realising it. Because I think he's trying to say, I was responsible for the whole thing, for Lou Reed, for David Bowie, blah, blah, blah. But in a way, his subconscious has said the right thing, which is, you were probably the door.
Yes.
But all the real stuff happened inside, past the door.
I want to just slightly nuance that. I think he means there was a place that nobody could get into, and he designed a door. He created a door into it.
Yeah, I think you might be going a bit too Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen on this. I know he's in your show tonight while I'm recording this, but I think you've gone a little bit interior design literal about that.
Do you get tense, or is this a childhood experience? That do you get tense when you go?
I go to Millett's. Is it Millett's? That's the camping shop. Millett's, that was a joke. That was a joke based on the only camping shop I could think of. I don't even know if Millett's is a camping shop.
I see what you mean. Now, do you get anxious when you go into a usually hotel, I think, with a rotating door?
A bit, yeah. Not just a hotel. Lots of places have a rotating door.
Yeah, like old.
The BBC has a rotating door.
Does it?
Yeah, when you go into the BBC, not the first door, but the bit where you get your card and you go and have your meeting where they're not going to commission whatever it is you want them to, there's a rotating door.
Yeah, you're quite right, there is. I'm nervous about those doors. But anyway, Alex...
What, that you might get stuck in them forever?
Yeah, just... It seems to me there's a very, very quick succession of decisions you have to make, which you don't want to have to make with doors, which normally just let you in. You have to choose the bit to push on, and then you have to pretty... As soon as you're in, you have to start thinking about your exit.
Yeah, you're right.
By the way, the Alice Cooper thing does tell you, or not tell you, but it's revealing of something, which is... And that's why, ultimately, I'm slightly taken against him for saying it, although I don't know him, and I'm sure... Which is, it's another one of those things, which is, I gave him the band name and the glam and the costume. I think that's not really what Bowie is ultimately about.
No.
And it's sort of... it's sort of annoying, isn't it, when you hear someone saying that in a way, because you think, yeah, you don't understand really what Bowie... I mean, what are you saying, that you wrote all these extraordinary songs that he did over the years? Because that's really what we like about him.
Yeah, but again, you see, Alice's subconscious, perhaps, you know, I'm quite a believer in this, that the truth will out, has told the truth, because Alice is just about the costumes and the look and the, you know, attitude. Because he only wrote one great song. I mean, no doubt we have Alice Cooper fans listening who will disagree. But beyond School's Out, I'm not aware of any great Alice Cooper songs. But he was a very big showman. He did have a good old, at the time, edgy sort of character.
Yeah.
He did invent that. As you say, that's not really the important thing about Bowie.
It really isn't. And first of all, I don't think he did create a door. And if he did... I think it was really tiny and actually Bowie, I mean, I think Bowie built on it, you know, like a builder who's come in and said, I don't know who put that door in, but this is what you want. Because I think I just don't subscribe to the view. But here's the thing, 5 on Spotify, obviously the most popular 5 Alice, you might know more than you think.
Okay.
And what are the 5? I mean, you said 1.
School's Out.
Right. School's Out has 81.5 million streams.
Yes. That doesn't surprise me.
No, but it is kind of nothing as a song, isn't it?
It's all right. It's an all right. It's got a good riff.
It's a bit like something from a musical.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, all of his stuff is like something from Rocky Horror Show.
Yeah. So there are 4 more. And I think the highest one of all, with 213 million.
What, higher than School's Out?
Yeah. Is One Word Title.
Right. Is it one of his songs or is it a cover?
It's his song. I mean, I kind of know it now that it's a bit 80, I think.
Poison.
Yes.
Yes.
Poison is huge. And then there's another one, which is like a phrase you use. I think it's in a film. It was the title of that book written about the marijuana importer, the Welsh guy.
Yes. Mr. Cannabis. that's not right, is it?
What an effective cover that would be. The police ever came. No, it's a city in the south of France on the coast. I don't know why I'm giving...
Is it Mr. Can?
No. Well, it's a biscuit.
Mr. Digestive.
That's it, yeah. No, it's a... for God's sake, Nice.
Mr. Nice, yes.
No Mr. more Nice. Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah.
The other two, for different reasons, sound terrible. The one with 24 million streams is I'm 18.
He isn't, is he?
He isn't.
Well, he said he isn't now, but I wonder if he ever was. He obviously was 18, but when he did the song.
Right. I don't know whether that's true, but it also seems like the most underwhelming way to use that age in a title of a song, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm 18. Yeah.
I'm 18. Well, like a sort of...
Is it a song about trying to get a drink at a bar?
It could be, but it's very... It's just very, oh, and by the way, I'm 18. Is that, yeah.
Yeah, so to be honest with you, almost any song by a man from that period that's got a low age in it is already suspect.
Definitely. No, that's true. And then the final one is just sort of really begs lots of questions. It's Feed My Frankenstein.
I mean, all of those songs, except possibly I'm 18, illustrate what I was saying. Admittedly, he was 5 years before the Rocky Horror Show. But essentially, they're all songs that could have been in the Rocky Horror Show. Poison, you know, I'm Your Frankenstein, you know, all of them. Who do you think could have been said to have created the Doors to go through for rock music?
Sorry, is this a joke?
It's a joke. Yeah,
because like
I haven't done it very well. I haven't done it very well.
Like a lot of jokes, the premise and the question seem quite weird.
Yeah.
A bit like they don't want to mention some key words that might
I know. Well, I was trying to phrase it right and it didn't go very well.
Who do I think created the door for rock music?
Well, here's the problem. I've given away the joke by the fact I didn't say the door, I said the Doors. Yeah. Because you did say earlier, I don't think he did create the door to go through. You said that earlier. That's where I thought of the joke. And now I come back to it, but I've had to say Doors. Yeah.
If I'm honest, it's funnier saying, who's the lead singer of the Doors? Answer, Jim Morrison. That is actually funnier.
How is that funnier? That's just a trivia question.
It's not funny at all, but it's funnier than what you just did.
You say that, but you're laughing. Right, I'm going to go on to something else, which is I watched, because another thing I saw on Bowie News is some footage has appeared, which hasn't been seen before. And it's not that interesting. It's David Bowie in about 2003.
Right.
And he brings on Ray Davies.
Yeah.
To sing Waterloo Sunset. And he does some jokes, really bad jokes beforehand. Yeah. But let's not go into those because I think we've slagged him off too often for not being funny. The thing I've noticed is Ray Davies comes on and sings Waterloo Sunset with Bowie. And I'm watching it thinking, yeah, this is all right. And then I noticed towards the end of the song, Ray Davies is wearing a really weird bow tie and sort of slightly odd jacket, like quite a big bow tie, almost like a comedy clown bow tie.
Right.
And what it made me think of is, I don't care much about clothes. You may have noticed that about me.
I have maybe noticed, yeah.
Yeah, but I did a TV thing yesterday, and I did say to my wife, shall I wear this top? She also said, your hair's terrible, and the night before she'd given me a haircut and stuff. All this stuff that suggested that I cared about it enough to think about that. And yet I watched most of this song and didn't notice that he had basically a clown's bow tie on. And you don't, my point being that people worry a lot about what they look like on TV and stuff. And most of the time you're not even, you don't notice it. Even something quite garish and outlandish like that.
But I think that's actually a more general point about the way we think about ourselves. We tend to overthink all of these things, don't we? And most people are just not paying attention. If you came into our office, say, and then stood up on one of the tables in front of everyone and did like a weird sort of hula dance, I'm trying to think something, you know, and just started shouting your name.
I think if I was doing a hula dance, I would go down, 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 down. I'd try and make it something.
Yeah.
Fitting.
Yeah, did that sort of and then walked off again.
Yeah.
People would go, oh yeah, David, we came in and did that. But they wouldn't, in your mind, it might be something you never got over. You think, what the hell was I doing?
Yeah.
But most people would be like, do you remember that? Oh yeah, yeah. And then they'd say, by the way, has that thing happened yet? Have we got that commission or something? It would be.
That is true. Although I think it's truest about what people look like, because I think people worry very much about that. And most people aren't thinking about it. But in general, it's true. Yes, in general. I mean, I don't suffer from this very much. My wife suffers from it a lot.
Right.
My wife, who hardly ever goes out, whenever we used to go out, was always convinced that she looked terrible and that everyone, you know, thought she was gauche and awkward and all things she isn't. And I used to say, no, but the mistake you're making here is not that you look shit or whatever, because you don't, but that's not the important point. The mistake you're making here is thinking that anyone there is really thinking about you.
Yes.
Because all they're really thinking about is themselves.
Yes, exactly.
Everyone has an inflated idea about how they're impacting on the rest of the room.
Yeah.
And that's really what they're thinking about. They're not really thinking about you.
Would you?
But she's very convinced that people are, because she has this sort of sense of being judged all the time that a lot of people do. I don't really have that.
No, well, I don't think you do. I mean, when did you last go to a fancy dress party?
It would have been Jonathan Ross's Halloween party.
What did you wear for that?
Well, I got to a point to going to Jonathan Ross's thing. So a lot of people spend a lot of money doing that. And obviously I don't do that. Like Jimmy Carr will spend like $1,000 or something on his costume, and it'll look amazing. Or there'll be a woman like Holly Willoughby who will also look amazing. And in a way, fair enough, because there'll be 17 pictures of her in the mail on Sunday or whatever. What I decided is I always look terrible in a costume. So my best bet is a costume that I sort of look like anyway. And thus, my last few costumes at Jonathan Ross's thing, obviously that it hasn't happened recently, have all been people who look a bit like me anyway. And that would include Fidel Castro.
Yep.
Harold Shipman.
Okay.
I mean, it's a Halloween party, don't forget.
I can't really call Harold Shipman's to mind, really. Does he look like you, does he?
Yeah. He looks quite a lot like me. Wow. I mean, balder. So my costume was literally a doctor's white coat, a stethoscope. Right. I think I made, which I've done a few times, which is shit, at a Halloween party, a little name badge, just in case people weren't sure. I've done that a few times.
Yeah.
But that was my Harold Shipman. I was Stalin once as well. And that's probably the biggest effort I've ever made, because I shaved off the beard section of my facial hair and just kept the moustache. It wasn't just that. I also had a Russian hat and a big greatcoat.
You mean you shaved off your beard?
I shaved off the beard part of my facial hair.
You shaved off your beard?
No. Well, yes. But I think I have to say I shaved off the beard part of my facial hair, because otherwise you don't get the image in your mind that I kept the moustache, which is absolutely key to Stalin.
I don't... Listen, it's a small point, but...
It's not a small point.
The section of my face seems like something you'd say if you didn't know... Well, except you do know the word for beard because it's in there, but it's like... You shaved off your beard. There's no, I mean, that.
No, I'm sorry. I'm a bloke who's got a beard. We've established that, right?
Yep.
If I said to you and we weren't looking at each other, I've shaved off my beard.
Yes.
I don't think you would necessarily think Owen kept the moustache. I think you'd just think, right, you're clean shaven. Because if I was clean shaven, I wouldn't say I've shaved off my beard and moustache. I would just say I've shaved off my beard.
So if someone says to you, the guy that's meeting you, the Uber driver, has a beard, would you say, and a moustache?
No, I wouldn't. I'd assume that... I'm saying that beard includes moustache, except in the rare occasions when one is looking at a sort of Mormon who has a beard and not a moustache, and that is unusual. If that person said to me, the Uber driver's meeting you, he's got a beard, by the way, he's a Mormon, I would think, oh, right, you mean a beard without a moustache. But that's quite a lot of information.
You should know that tonight he's going to a fancy dress party as Stalin, if you know what I mean. And you'd think, I know exactly what I'm looking for.
No one will say, you're meeting the Uber driver, he's got a beard, if he's just got a moustache. No one will ever say that.
No, right.
They'll say, he's got a moustache.
Yeah.
But if you've got a beard and moustache, like I have, and you say, I've shaved off my beard, then I think people assume, right, you're clean shaven.
Did Bowie ever have a beard?
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm going to Google it.
When did he have a beard?
He definitely had a moustache.
Yeah, moustache he's had a few times, although not that often.
Yeah, here he is with a beard. He's had a goatee a few times.
Oh, okay, but that's not a beard.
No, well, hang on. Okay, there's a whole section on this from Quora.
Okay.
Why didn't David Bowie ever grow facial hair? Right? Okay. And Emil Frederick, Bowie fan since the age of 10, says that when he played Baal in Bertolt Brecht's Baal in 1981, he had a full beard. He had a moustache in 77. Oh, yeah, and he's got a beard in the Hours period.
Yeah, that little, but that's more like a goatee, isn't it?
Well, I'd say it's in between a beard and a goatee. But, yes, he was more of a goatee man than a beard. And that's kind of, I think that says something interesting about him, doesn't it? In that he was quite controlled.
Yeah.
And obviously, as we know, you know, like to have a look. So I think it would be true about David Bowie is that he'd like to have a certain look. So just a beard like I've got feels a bit too like I haven't really thought about my face.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely right. I think he would want to play with everything. And so, sort of sculpting.
Have you ever had a beard?
The trouble is that when I go on holiday or I sort of think, oh, I'm going to stop, because shaving is like having a job, isn't it? It's like drinking water. It's like, oh God, I mustn't forget to do it. Mm. And I shave every day, but it's a bit boring doing it. And so when I'm on holiday, like many people, I leave it. And the slight problem is that I'm not fecund in this bit here. Like, I don't know what this is, on my
underlip, top chin bit.
Yeah, exactly. But a little bit is, but most of it isn't. And so right. It looks...
Even now I can see that, because you've got a sort of 5 o'clock shadow on your cheeks, but on your chin, under mouth area, it's a little bit like a ventriloquist dummy. You know that bit of ventriloquist dummy where it's got a hinge there?
Yeah.
Looks a little bit like that.
Yeah. And also it sort of goes a bit low here. So all in all, I think I look all right in a sort of George Michael-y, like a few days or whatever, a week. But it's not great. And anyway, much as I like your beard, well, actually, I'm completely neutral about your beard, if I'm honest.
I mean, I can tell you, if I shaved it off, I think you'd think it looked weird. I haven't shaved it off for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Last time I did was when I was Stalin, because as I say, I shaved off the beard but kept the moustache.
Right, you shaved off your beard, yeah.
No, I shaved off the beard but kept the moustache. But what I basically look like is a sort of ancient schoolboy without the beard.
Okay.
Because I still look sort of, I don't look young, I look old, but I do look sort of more baby childlike face. Without a beard.
Baby face.
Yeah, sort of baby faced in a sort of weird way. So I just look like a sort of Benjamin Button, although that's the wrong example because he's just the person who was born old and got young. I look like an old person, but somehow or other, like a child who in a magical, bad, horror way has suddenly grown old.
Right. I mean, I'm going to be sensitive here because I don't, you know, I'll let you say what you want to say. But I often think people with beards maybe are covering something up.
Their skin on their face.
That's true. No, but I mean... Are people, let's leave you out of it, generally speaking, do people with beards think, well, I look better with my half of my face covered up because I don't like my chin or my neck or my cheeks or, I don't know, cheeks?
No, that is certainly the case with me. I'm not covering it up. Well, I'm covering it up, but I'm very open about it. I've talked about it quite often. I have got a double chin and I am under the impression that you can't see that with the hair in front of it. That's actually not true. Because when I see photos of myself with the beard, I notice, oh, I still look like I've got a double chin. Shit. I thought it was a massively good... I thought it was like Alice Cooper, a door behind which you couldn't see the theatrics of my chins.
Right.
But I do clearly have a double chin. But I think it's worse without hair.
Because the other thing people do, and which I could, I guess, do... is when they're bald, they wear a beard and just, I don't know, in some sense, trying to make up for the overall acreage.
Yes, I think that is definitely true. I remember going to a thing and seeing Will Self make fun of me and I think Mark Lawson, I was at some event, for having upside down heads. But I always thought that was weird because I'm not bald. I always thought like an upside down head is got to be someone who has a beard but no hair.
Yeah.
But then,
no, you know, that definitely doesn't work with you because you've got hair. But there's a thing in...
Unless I'm upside down with a beard.
Yeah, but then you...
I know, but then what's the point?
Means you've got a... what would you call that? A head that you could have either way you want, sort of...
Yeah, but you could say that of any head.
Well, not mine, because I'm bald.
Yeah, but you could still have... If you were upside down, right? Because you now have a slight 5 o'clock shadow, you would look like a bloke who's got very small amount of hair on his head and quite a big chin.
Yeah, right.
With a bit of fuzz on it.
With a mouth at the top of my head.
Well, yeah, but that's true of any upside down head. So the podcast is going on a bit long. We did record a bit more, but that's the end of it for now. So we'll see you next week with part two.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.